Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 80. Going to continue our positional recap reviews of the 2023 fantasy baseball season, heading to second base. Going to get you covered there on the top 30 ADP and much more as usual per the position. Got a lot of great listener questions slash conversation, which will be fun for that as always. And we'll talk some playoffs. We'll talk about our buddy Little Book of Calm, just going deeper and deeper into the free agent discussion from last week and much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Fired up tonight, man. It is going to be a show, I think.
Yep.
It's going to be a show. Fired up because, I don't know, I guess first and foremost, we are a week from first pitch. The Bubba and the Bloom Open will have already taken place.
Yep.
This time next week, our live show at First Pitch Arizona has been officially scheduled for prime time, maybe a little bit later than prime time, hours.
This is like late show stuff where you get the second late show where, you know, the good stuff really goes down. That's what we got.
Yeah. It's we are right after the FTN fantasy baseball podcast. So I guess they're prime time and then we are late night. So we have been talking back and forth for a little bit before the show about what we're going to do. We've got some fun things planned for the live show. Truly cannot wait for that. That's going to be awesome. Presented by High Noon, of course, that show. But I don't know. I'm also stoked for the World Series. I'm stoked that Virginia Tech destroyed Syracuse tonight in the college football division. I'm stoked that we are halfway through the baseball forecaster in terms of player boxes. We're done with hitters, moving on to pitchers. Stoked for a bunch of listener questions and feedback that we got leading up to the show tonight. Yeah. I don't know. Could go on and on, but that's where I'm at. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Just one quick note on the podcast, though. Since obviously we're recording next Friday live in Arizona, there will be no next Thursday show. Just if anybody's looking for one, it will not be happening because we'll be at first pitch. We'll record Friday night. Whenever I get the MP3 from the gentleman that helps us out, I will upload it. So it usually will be sometime Saturday. So if you just aren't available for first pitch, unfortunately, you'll still be able to listen to it. It'll be a little different, a lot of live interaction like last year, but people loved it. We got good comments back from it. Like Ryan said, we were talking for a good 45 minutes for the show. We finally said, okay, we just got to record a podcast tonight because we want to keep, we're jacked up for first pitch. So just a reminder, no show next week. The following week, we'll continue our positional recaps. And that's in November. So remember, twice a week. So we're going to start booking through these things so then we can get you ready for 2024. So a little bit of housekeeping in that regard. You asked how I'm doing. I'm doing great. Played golf today in a scramble. High Noon sponsored my golf cart, at least. Very, very well.
I have to muster balls a little bit, man, because we have our invitational, our open next Thursday. Like, you're practicing in Monterey. I mean, lucky you. I haven't played in a while. I'm at a severe handicap for this.
Yeah, this is exactly how Ryan sounded last year. If you listen to this podcast last season, about a year ago, and he goes screwed. Like sets the course record. So I'm not worried about Ryan right about now, and we'll have that full recap on the podcast live next week when he tells me how much he wins by and the fact I paid for his golf yet again. So we'll have all that fun stuff. Don't you worry; he'll have some fun with me on that one for sure.
It's going to be a good time. We set up all the pairings, the tee times. We got four separate tee times. Closest to the pin contest, putting green contest. Like, it's going to be, I cannot wait. It's going to be awesome. Yep.
It's going to be great. So yeah, check all that fun stuff out. We're jacked. Like, I know people are like, just get on with the show already, but it's a great time of the year. And it's really like the kickoff for baseball for, like, we do it year round, but it's a gigantic like catapult into baseball season. Once, you know, he's working on the forecaster, Ryan is, FPass happens. I actually this past week got my email. I'm back on catchers this year for the Black Book. So watch out, folks. It's going down.
All is well in the world if Bubba's on if Bubba's diving deep into the 45th catcher by mid-December. All is well.
It's due by mid-December this year. They're pushing up the due date. So I'm gonna have to ramp up my catcher knowledge here real quick.
It's already higher than most.
You're gonna hate me on this show in no time if you don't already when it comes to catchers. But yeah, it's going to be great. But tonight we're talking second base. And before we get to the talk on second base, we'll do what we've been doing this time of the year, postseason recap. And it's almost been, I feel like, really convenient. It seems like the series wrap up and then we get to preview each series kind of at this time in the last few weeks. Obviously, we know World Series is happening. Oh, wait, we're going to be in Arizona for game 5 of the World Series. Oh, what a concept. But it's going to be great. We got the Diamondbacks versus the Rangers, people that love big markets. They hate this. I personally love it as a baseball fan. This is freaking awesome. Both teams, like, it's hard not to root for the Diamondbacks for one. Rangers, I like them. I know some people have their mixed emotions on the Rangers for some weird reason. But this is going to be fun, Ryan. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty pumped for this postseason because it's wide open because both teams' pitching's kind of been suspect in the starting pitching aspect of life. Both teams' offenses are clicking. Like, it's going to be good.
It's going to be, I mean, from a pure baseball standpoint, it's going to be awesome. We've got Virginia Tech alum Joe Mantiply in the bullpen. We've got, but seriously, like, the ascension of Brandon Pfaadt, the reincarnation of Nate Eovaldi coming back with higher velocity. Like, there's a lot of different storylines. I think the Rangers lineup is quite a bit better than Diamondbacks. If I'm picking, I'm going to say Rangers in 6, but I hope to God that this goes at least 5.
Yep.
And we'll get to that in just a second, but I think Rangers in 6 is the call. It'll be a ton of fun, and just the buzz around, again, going back to first pitch, but like, the fact that the Diamondbacks are in the World Series while we're there is just going to be even crazier. I do need to ask you. So I'm flying in. I could not move my flights around. So I am flying in Wednesday night, and I looked at the times, and it'll be really weird because we're flying in from Portland, coming in from the north. Like, we cross over directly over that stadium over nice. Chase Field in downtown, and it will be during a World Series game, which is, like, kind of weird, kind of crazy. We'll be watching it. I'm sure I'll be watching it on the plane, but then to be flying over Chase, like, while it's happening, will be nuts. You will already be there, my friend. Mm-hmm. And what's the vibe on potentially attending game 5 Wednesday night in Phoenix?
There is a group of 4 of us. I am one of the 4 that are, I say, we're like 75-25 going. We're kind of waiting on one more final, like, yes, let's do it situation. If not, I told them at worst, let's go to one of the sports bars right next to the stadium and right watch around. It and party it up. Like, I'm down for that too. So regardless, we're going to live it up. I've told some of my Diamondbacks buddies, 2 of them are in this 4-pack, that it's expensive, but you will never regret it because it's an experience you never, like, I went to 2 Giants World Series. I was telling Ryan before the show, I went to the one in 2010 because at my age, it was 02 and then Battle of the Bay. Like, I was too young to go to, like, any of these things. 02, I was in college. There's no way I was affording a World Series ticket. But I went in 2010. That was great. Went in 2012, watched Pablo hit 3 home runs. Things I'll never forget. It's worth every penny in the end. It's just one of those things. If you're a diehard baseball fan, especially of a team, you find a way if you can. If you can't, I get it. It's not cheap. But if you can find a way, you rebudget your next month for all I care. Like, you make it work. And so we're leaning towards going. I want to go. I told them, just let me know when you want to go and where the money needs to go, and I'm in. So that's the plan. At worst, I plan on being within a rock's throw of that stadium. There's some bars right outside that place. So I'm looking forward to it.
I remember, the night that Arizona won the NLCS, I tweeted this out, but just went on TickPick and looked at, like, the get-in price, and it looked like around $400-$450. And I think that's gone up to like $650 as of Thursday night. From my experience, and I have no experience with this baseball, with college football games, I was just at the Notre Dame USC game, like, the same day. I think your play might be the same day ticket.
Yep.
It's all digital now, so it's super easy to get your ticket and go through third party, whatever. What we found is, like, that day it tends to go down a little bit, but again, no idea what it'll turn out regardless. Exactly.
So, like, that's an angle. I've done that for football too. Like, I've gone to games at Dallas to open the season, and we'd literally be waking up hungover in the afternoon when the game's like 3 hours out. We hadn't bought our tickets. We went online and bought them, like, super cheap. Good. Like, there's angles to do these things. If there's a will, there's a way. Put it that way.
And worst case, if you don't go, like you said, just go to a local watering hole. Yep. And I'll miss you at the hotel bar Wednesday night. But
oh, if I go to the game or a bar close by, you'll hear me when I get back. I'll tell you that much because I'll be having a great time.
Won't reveal my room number. I'll be resting up for
golf, so you can beat golf. Me. Yes.
So it'll be wild to see that while we're so close to the thing. I guess game 6 and 7 will be in Texas no matter what, but still the game 5 overlap will be pretty sweet.
And I'm curious to see like how it goes in the area, because Doug Dennis said it was the best FPAS he's ever been to back in 2001?
2001.
Yep. Yeah. And he says the best FPAS he's ever been to. So that's saying a lot, honestly. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that impacts things. Does not impact the AFL schedule. We got that email today. So that is business as usual. Don't worry about that. All right. Let's talk a little Book of Calm here. Our buddy, he brought that question last week about free agents, first year of a contract, how they produce. Last year didn't go so well. Then we both kind of talked about, and you had a good question of like how, like a longer track record, so on and so forth. So you got a chart here. Why don't you like let us know what our buddy Little Book of Calm has come up with in this search of first-year players?
Yeah, so I went – so we talked a little bit about this on last week's episode. And Little Book of Calm, who can be followed at Twitter on at LIL Book of Calm. Fantastic follow. Like, super smart dude. I've been going back and forth with him actually pretty much throughout the week, kind of – I don't want to say working on this, but just – shooting ideas around and that sort of thing. And he brought up a question last week that, or not a question, more just like a statement saying, looking at the free agents who signed a big contract entering 2023 and how most of them, if not all of them, pretty much busted compared to, in terms of their end of season rank versus their preseason ADP. And if you recall, like we went back and forth and said, oh, I wonder, like same team, different team. What about previous years? Well, our man has us covered here. So Little Book of Calm, what were you looking at on the screen for the YouTube crowd? Did this same study, looked at, and well, put in quotes, big contracts. We define big contracts as any contract, free agent contract signed where the average annual value of the contract was more than the qualifying offer, which is pretty genius because the qualifying offer changes every year based on dynamics and the market and that sort of thing. And just super interesting results that you're looking at the screen. So looking from left to right, in the red, there's a bust rate. And again, this is where players finished versus where their ADP was. A bust, which is like tons of loss value. A loss, which is like a slight loss. On par, in honor of Bubba and the Bloom Open next week, you pretty much broke even. Then there's a slight gain and a boom. And what we found over the last 4 years was honestly pretty fascinating. Last year was the outlier. So last year, there was like a 46% bust rate of the 13 players that signed a contract, a big free agent contract, 46% of them busted. Over the last 5 seasons, that's just 25%. And so like you look at this, on the right side, there's a net down and a net up. Basically what that's saying is over the last 5 years, 70% of your big free agents have either met or improved or returned positive investment on their ADP, which to me is like really fascinating because I think of these big contracts as like guys who are obviously very successful because they earn the contract and thus are going in the early rounds. In the early rounds, research has shown like your bust rate's pretty high just because it's hard to return that high of value. Like your ADP price is so high that it's just a high bar to clear. But 70% either met or improved on their ADP. We also found that there was no real difference between signing with a new team versus re-signing with your old team. That was one of the things we talked about last week. Yeah. Yep, with Aaron Judge. Over the last 5 years, that really was not a difference. And so, like, my conclusion to this is signing a major free agent contract, like avoiding those guys because there's a down year, that first year after the contract is pretty much a myth. And the numbers kind of bore that out. Again, just 1 out of 4 have busted in the last 5 years. 1 out of 4 broke even and then even more than that gained or improved upon almost their, half of them were positive. ADP. Yeah. So just super interesting stuff. And again, shout out to Little Book of Calm to kind of throwing this together and looking at the data, but just thought it'd be pretty cool to follow up on that and talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy because like we talked about it last week, we just had the assumption because it's talked about so much, like it's a negative thing. It's just, right. It's almost like it's a common discussion, like just avoid this or that, or be wary of it type thing, just because it seems to happen more often than not. So to see these numbers, because like even last week we talked about it and the numbers like, oh yeah, look at 53, almost 54%, like sucked. Like it's just like the way it goes. To see that in the previous 4 years is like, no, actually it's the complete opposite pretty much. Like it's just... Yep. It's pretty wild to see, and like there's so many deeper ways to go about it. There's probably no exact formula, but it's like, well, what if it's a big market versus a little market? Like, because like we talked about, like Lindor going to New York or like a Philadelphia, if like those kind of crowds and markets, okay, I could see that maybe being more pressure compared to going to Kansas City. But then again, who's signing the big contract in Kansas City? Not very many people. So you got those kind of angles too, and that could be just literally grasping at straws type conversations. Yeah. But it is interesting to see the fact that, because I think when we left last week, it was kind of like, wow, it's pretty impressive. Maybe I should kind of avoid these guys. So to see the complete flip, it's I guess we'll see. There's some big contracts coming up this year. We'll see, yeah. See where it goes.
I think it's valuable. I think it's valuable takeaway information for guys that that sign with new teams. And it is like with any study like this, I mean, we went back and forth. Like, how do you define a bust versus a loss versus breaking even, that sort of thing? There's a million ways to slice it. Like, yeah, switching leagues, going across countries, going to a big market versus a small market, all that kind of stuff. But just in the aggregate, I thought these numbers, again, which you're looking at the screen, were pretty telling in that that the par or better was far outweighed the bust for these new contracts. And it's just interesting, like, you just... I don't say you, but like we tend to think of one or two players who would happen to who suck their first year on a new team. And you apply that narrative across everybody. And when you actually look at the data to dig into it, it tells you something else, which is always, always informative in the off season.
Yeah. It just goes to a deeper thing. Like the whole biasy conversation. It's like one guy scorns you. So now we like just start crossing guys. I think we talked about it like a lot last year when we were doing like our recaps and then our previews of certain guys, like, wow, maybe I shouldn't be so far off on this guy. Like we always just kind of cross certain guys off, and it's just another angle of crossing guys off our list. Cause that is something that's valuable. We've talked about it, like going into a draft room, like having your guys for good reasons though. Don't just have your guys, like there's gotta be work behind it. So you have to cross guys off. That's just the nature of the beast. So it just seemed like an easy way out. Like, hey, let's just cross these guys off. And now it's more like, yeah, if you like this guy's, don't really worry too much. And it's very, very interesting.
Or if anything, like I was saying, like early picks tend to bust more than later picks just because the bar you have to clear. If anything, highlight these guys. I don't know. That's a contrarian thing, but.
Yeah, because maybe it's a quote unquote safer pick, which is always a horrible thing to say when it comes to fantasy safe. But it could be a safer early pick. Like you said, yeah, at least get your money back. And then hit the lottery later type stuff. That is a very interesting point to take. Yeah. And see where it goes there. Let's talk.
Before we transition, just shout. And we love listener questions. We fish and fish and fish for so many every show. We got a ton tonight, which is awesome. But just anyone who wants to interact and do this kind of stuff on the show, like we will, we'll bring it up there. And again, shout out to Lil Book for doing this for us.
Yeah. That's clutch. Big stuff there. Second base. Now we've done catcher. We know how good catcher is. We've established that.
We know we've done the best position. It's all downhill.
And tonight is a definite downhill moment. We did first base, and that was an interesting one. You saw like early guys were great, a gigantic red spot, and then you know you moved on from there. Now we go to second base, and I was telling Ryan before the show, I try to work on some of my ranks beforehand to kind of have an angle to talk about stuff, but I don't care about it as much because this isn't a 2024 preview. It's a review, stuff like that. But when you make rankings, you look back on the previous season. That's just kind of how the reality of the situation is. And the second base position is interesting and not in a good way. It's extremely top heavy and things will change as it goes. But like I kind of got that thing even before I saw Ryan's board. So Ryan, when you put this board together, what did you see that stood out to you?
Many things. I would say one of the things that stuck out to me was, and my brain works differently. Like what sticks out to me doesn't stick out to others. There were a good amount of steals in the top 10 of second base. So every single second baseman that was drafted in the top 10 preseason at the position stole double digit bases. And then you had your elite, Nico Hoerner at 43 steals, who was taken 10th overall at the position at 138. You had Andrés Giménez and Tommy Edman steal 30 and 27 respectively. And you had Jazz Chisholm in like a half season. We'll talk about him a little bit more in detail. Steal 22, but even like your studs, your Mookie Betts, Marcus Semien, Jose Altuve, those guys all had 14 steals. Ozzie Albies had 13. Like, I feel like this was the place to get steals in 2023. We can talk about some of the deficiencies in other categories, specifically batting average. Batting average was pretty rough throughout this position last season, and kind of power, although Max Muncy, like, as a one-man wrecking crew, bucks that trend. But I thought this was your place to get steals, especially early. You had to pick those up. That was one thing that definitely stood out to me. And again, the what we're looking at here on the YouTube screen is what we've been looking at the past two positions, is top 30 preseason ADP. And what we've done with that is we've overlaid the end of season rank for the Razzball Player Rater, and then your three main stats, average, home run, and stolen base, color coded. So it's all there and packaged and pretty for everyone to see here.
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Mookie Betts is number one, 11th ADP, 307, 29, or 39, 14. I don't think we need to talk much about Mookie unless you got a whole lot extra on him, but dude's a beast. He's going to have second base outfit eligibility. Like,
yeah,
he's Mookie Betts. I really
didn't realize he played. I almost took Mookie shortstop off the list because I thought he was like shortstop or one, but he played 70 games at second base. I didn't realize he played that many.
He played 18 at short. He just missed short.
I know.
And that was right when they traded for Miguel Rojas.
Ahmed Rosario.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. They had Miguel Rojas. They traded for Ahmed Rosario. So they had two shortstops, was the problem.
Yep.
Because he was at 18 at that point. Like, he would have had it pretty easily and just disappeared.
But yeah, so we'll take him off the shortstop version of this pod either next week or 2 weeks or whenever we do it. But yeah, not much to say about Mookie Betts, first rounder, and hell of a year.
Marcus Semien's one that I want to discuss. He was ADP 34, second baseman off the board. Finished second overall still. 276 average, 29 homers, 14 stolen bases. But to some, it was kind of like a weird year. Like, his average was one of the best he's had since 2019. Power was still very good. Steals were down from last year, but runs, RBIs, and it's just one thing we talked about last week a lot, just consistent plate appearance after plate appearance after plate appearance. I guess why I wanted to bring him up is the numbers are phenomenal. He finished second for a reason. It just seemed much more quiet to me this year for some reason with Marcus Semien that I think, at least to me, it needed to be highlighted just how good he still was, even though he might not have been as dominant feeling-wise this past season. I don't know if you have thoughts on Marcus Semien.
No, it sticks out. I mean, per HQ's Valley, is Marcus Semien. This is his third straight $30 season. This is his third straight season. This blows my mind. Third straight season with 720 plate appearances or more, and five seasons in a row, if we exclude the COVID year, with 700-plus plate appearances. Like, you want to look at a compiler, there is nobody like Marcus Semien in terms of racking up plate appearances, which I think is a skill. That skill could wane when you turn 33, which Semien will turn next year, which is a little bit of my concern for 2024. But you're right. Like, very much flew under the radar and just plays every single day. Like, the steals weren't quite there, going 14 down from 25 last year. But dude, 122 runs, 100 RBI, 29 homers. Like, what a year. What a year.
Great offense he's in that shouldn't change. Like, there's a lot to like there with Marcus Semien. So kudos to him. It's one of those things. Okay, here's another biasy comment. And I've really never been in on Marcus Semien, so I'm scared to get in on him now type situation.
It feels like a ticking time bomb. And I mentioned the age. Like, I don't know how many, maybe this is a study for the offseason, how many hitters in their mid-30s continue to, and maybe he's like a swan. He's just one of those like unicorns. Semien is, but I feel like this is a ticking time bomb because so much of the value is tied to that plate appearance total. When you're in your mid-30s, can you consistently get 700 plate appearances? We've said that the last couple of years, and you'd be wrong about Semien, yep. But at some point, man, it's gotta change. But
yep, it's like, a 600 still good enough is what it comes down to. That's a tough question to have there.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys that just can't compile plate appearances, is Jazz Chisholm. He did have 383 this past year, which is better than 241 last season. But you look at Jazz, he was the third second baseman off the board, ADP of 43. Finished the 25th second baseman. That's because that plate appearance thing we mentioned. He played 97 games. That's the second most of his career, though. He hit 250 with 19 homers and 22 steals, 50 runs, 51 RBIs. And again, he did that in 97 games. And this is the thing we talk about every single season with Jazz Chisholm. Like, per game might be second base number one per game when it comes down to it. But it's the per game problem that we have with Jazz. And he got hurt playing the outfield this year, like we were all worried about when they said they're going to play him in the outfield. It's just one of those, like, if he ever put together a full season, how great would it be? It's the risk you have to take on draft day. I think he still was very good because you got to factor in replacement value. Maybe, I don't know what you would have done. Maybe you found something out there. I don't know. But, man, the fact that he played 97 games and still put up 19 homers and 22, he almost went 20-20 still. That's pretty remarkable. Like, we're drooling over Nolan Jones for going 20-20. Like, Jazz did the same thing. Given you had the ADP of 43 compared to the waiver wire, I get it.
Yep.
But second base, first outfield slash first base, like, it's one of those things, like, maybe we're too harsh on Jazz. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the ADP. There's a lot of discussion there, but what's your thoughts on Jazz?
I think it is because of the cost. And I mean, to be clear, before I get into Jazz, he will not be second base eligible next season. True. But we threw him on here just because for all of 2023, and he was drafted as a second baseman. It's the same conundrum as last year. Yeah, the dude went 20-20. And say, like, and your comment about replacement level, Bubba, is spot on. What if you had Jazz early? And like you pick up, that's the exact name I was just going to say. What if you picked up Zach Geloff in the second half and you combine Geloff with Jazz, and like that's a top three second baseman, that combination of players. So me personally, I'm just risk averse in the early rounds because I don't think Jazz Chisholm's ADP is going to change that much because of what we saw on a per game basis, what you were just talking about. I think he's still going to cost you like a fourth-ish round pick. And for me, I just want to see somebody, I said this before the season, I need to see him go through the entire season. But maybe that's like a flaw in my game. And maybe you say, hey, I'll take a 2020 guy in a partial season and piece it together from there through Fab. And you can definitely be successful that way. It's just, the other thing I'll add, going back to the anti-Marcus Semien, is like, yes, Semien in his mid-30s, Jazz Chisholm's in his mid-20s. Like, who's to say he can't put together a full season of plate appearances? If that happens, dude, it's a 30-30 season at least.
Easy. So, I think we're crossing close to 40-40. Or at least 30-45 maybe or something. Like, it's a wild number that could be coming that way. And the Marlins are getting better. Like, they're a young team that's actually, like, putting a half-decent offense out there. So
the crazy thing with Jazz, just to kind of wrap it up, finished strong as hell, man. 5 homers, 5 steals in September. If you throw August in there, those 2 months, 10 homers, 7 steals last 2 months of the season.
Once, like, he got healthy, he started playing again. Good. That's why it's so tough, man. Like, you just look at him and go, tough. Man, if he's just on the diamond, life is beautiful. We'll talk a lot probably about Jazz in our previews episodes, just because there's so many angles and formats that he's better for and whatnot, that it's worth the juice is worth the squeeze, and other places it might not be. And that's just the reality of the situation. Speaking of another guy, had a great season, but only played 90 games. I thought he played a little more than that. Only 90 games for Jose Altuve. Still hit 17 homers, stole 14 bags, which is great because he hit 18 steals last year after 3 straight years of 6 or less. Hit 311. He is 33. That's another thing to worry about. And then he just had a monster postseason just to top it off. What's your thoughts on Jose Altuve? Because this is another one of those guys people kind of thought he was getting too old. You know, the time was coming. And even with missing time due to injury, still had a heck of a season.
And I think we're I don't know, as an industry or what I'm hearing, like I think we're beyond the stolen bases are scarce conversation, given what we saw in 2023 with steals going up. I think the tired, wired version of this is guys who are elite batting average guys who can also hit homers and steals are like the scarcest thing out there. And Jose Altuve fits that mold like a glove. Like I'm sure I could do a bloom board on it, but like how many guys hit 300 and went 20-20, which Altuve basically did. I mean, yeah, he missed the first, 2 months of the season. Just a fantastic year. And yes, 33, but like would not have much hesitation at all taking him early, especially at what we'll get to, I think will be a pretty shallow position next year.
Yep, I'm with you 100% on that. Ozzie Albies, this is a guy I absolutely love, and he came back, you know, last season or 2022, injury-riddled season, 2021 coming out party. Came back to that coming out party in 2023. Ozzie Albies at 280, 33 home runs, 13 steals. That's the number that people are cringing on because he had 20 back in 2021. But prior to that, was like a 15-steal dude. So maybe that's just who he is, even with the new environment, hit 280. Again, similar like we talked about Semien, that Atlanta offense ain't going to suck for a while. So Albies is a beast, and he's a guy that I'm really looking forward to seeing his ADP because right now he's the second base. He's going ahead of Semien in drafts. Yeah, and that's an interesting, because you're looking at the age difference between the two. I think that's a deciding factor. Albies is 26 years old. So I love what he did. Could have stole some more bags. That'll be the big negative on him last season. But other than that, another monster season for Mr. Ozzie Albies.
It was just wild seeing basically every day seeing Acuna, Albies, Olsen,
Riley,
and Austin. Yeah, I was going to say, who's the fourth? Austin Riley. Seeing those four guys at the top of the lineup every single day. And that matters. Those guys are all back. Extension friendly. Atlanta has locked all those guys up. I think one of the probably the main takeaway with Ozzie Albies is sometimes so injury riddled seasons, which you mentioned, Bubba, in 2022. Like, I think sometimes we overrate that, especially for older players. And Jeff Zimmerman has done some research on this, that a lot of times, like if your player fought through an injury and struggled, a lot of times they don't come back from that. I think your takeaway with Ozzie Albies is he's just so damn young. This was just his age 26 season. That if you have kind of looking into 2024 draft season, if you have other 26 or younger hitters who struggled injury-wise this year, they're young enough to bounce back. And that's what we saw with Ozzie Albies. I mean, basically last year was a total loss season. And Albies this year in 2023 pretty much put up $30 season, which is pretty much right in line with what we saw in 2021. So basically the same guy. Just had that down 2022, which was, again, mightily impacted by injury.
And it makes you wonder what those injuries in 2022 is. Maybe the speed comes back even more next season because he's working through. There's just a whole lot of angles to look at and try to unravel as we predict the future of fantasy baseball.
It was more a green light thing with Albies. He was 93% success rate. So he was fine. Speed was fine, but he just didn't run that often with Atlanta. So it's got to be more of it, which is kind of weird, like right after Acuna, who just has the greenest light of all time. It'll be interesting to see if that shifts.
It could have got to the point, though, is like Acuna can run because Albies is up, but now we have our boppers. Don't screw this up. Like, we need, don't run it down.
Scoring position. Like,
When you're on first base, you're in scoring position with these guys. So just hang out. Yep. So. Tommy Edman, this is a guy that is a fun talking point each and every season in fantasy because you either love him, you hate him, many other things. Sixth ADP second baseman, finished 24th overall on the season at 248 with 13 homers, 27 steals, hit 248, average down, the lowest of his career, actually. But you look at the power, you look at the speed, you look at most of the numbers, they kind of fall in line with the past. And he only played in 137 games compared to late to other seasons. So some could say it was kind of a down season for Tommy Edman. At the same time, it's one of those, like, he still stole a ton of bags. So what's your thoughts on Tommy Edman?
Just wrote Edman's forecaster box, actually. And I thought for as polarizing a player as Tommy Edman has been, like on Twitter, skill set is like remarkably stable.
Yep.
Like the contact, the like, okay, power, and the stolen bases are there. The big differences with Tommy Edman this year. Really three things. One, like you alluded to, Bubby, missed a month in the middle of the season with a wrist injury, so that knocked his plate appearances. Tommy Edman also hit ninth more often than he hit leadoff. And I think that was kind of the polarizing thing online about Edman is like, where is he going to lead off or is he going to hit ninth? Because that stuff does matter. He hit ninth more than leadoff this year, which did kind of ding his runs scored. I think it was like 20, 25 fewer than 2022, which matters. And the stolen bases, like the stolen bases were still there. 27 bags for Edman, 30 in 2022. But in 2023 stolen base environment, 27 stolen bases are still good, but it's not stealing 30 last year. Like it doesn't stick out that much from a pure valuation standpoint. So like, I think Edman is actually, he's fine. And I would easily put Edman in the top 10, maybe top five at the position, because I think the skills are stable and he's eligible at three different positions. I think second, short, and outfield. And I think you know what you're getting. You're getting a decent average, some homers, and a good amount of bags. But it's just interesting to see like a stable skill set, how polarizing Edman is, and some of those differences from last year.
Yeah, he's just kind of that boring guy that you can almost pencil in his numbers, barring injuries, which some people love, some people hate. Like, yeah, 51 games at second base, you got that. 48 at shortstop, so you got that, and then the outfield. So that's a nice middle infield, outfield kind of situation there with Mr. Tommy Edman. If you can stomach it, he's another one of those guys. I'm like, am I really paying that price for Tommy Edman? But we shall see. We shall see.
I'll pay it.
Well, and this is where people go, Bubba, you're a hypocrite, because I was all in on Andrés Giménez. It's a dude I love. He went six picks later than Tommy Edman. And if you look at the two, like Edman's a consistent guy, where Giménez is very, very roller coastery, is the way I can put it. He's only 25, though. That's one thing I like about him. And Edman's young, too. But with Giménez, 15 homers, 30 stolen bases, hit 251. The average dropped a ton. I did not expect him to hit 297. 250, 260 is probably what he is. I expect a little more power, but the steals went up. Counting stats were okay. He hit in the middle of the Cleveland order, so that kind of messed with his counting stats. I think he's a very good player. I think looking back on things, Edman's the better player. But I still think Giménez has a higher ceiling than Tommy Edman. That's just the way I look at it. And that's kind of where I was drafting the difference between the two. But Edman also has the flexibility. I know we're not doing a 2024 comparison thing here, but the fact they go next to each other and they had very similar stat lines does stand out to me. So what's your thoughts on Andrés Giménez?
I think you nailed it. Not to kind of recount what you just said, but I do agree Giménez has the higher ceiling with Edman. The good thing with Giménez this year, stolen base success, 83% on the bases, and again, a total green light with Cleveland. So stealing those 30 bags could go up to like 40 if, and this is kind of a just math exercise, Giménez had a 360 BABIP in 2022, a 290-ish BABIP this season. And so like, where does that settle? If that settles in the 330, 340 area, Andrés Giménez gets on base enough to potentially steal 40 bags. And again, 2024 will be Giménez's age 25 season. So like, I think there is some room for growth there. So more of a draft preference thing, I think, how you want to construct your team. If you want safety, you'd go Edman. If you want upside, you'd go Giménez, I think.
Yeah, similar to catcher, second base, very youthful position. Like we're seeing a lot of these mid-20 dudes, and which leads to a ton of volatility, because like, are they still entering another level of production, or are we kind of this is who they are situations? That's what makes it kind of fun, because we've already mentioned, you know, Jazz, Ozzie, Edman, Giménez. Now we have Gleyber Torres. He was the eighth second baseman on the board, finished ninth overall. He was just kind of a steady Eddie. I had like a little bit of a slump at one point in the middle of the season, but one of the dudes, like we talk about the plug, like set it and forget it guys. I just never touched Torres. Finished with a 273 average, 25 homers, 13 stolen bases, scored 90 runs. Spent a lot of the year towards the top of the Yankees order, but he was all over the place depending on who was healthy at that point in time. To me, the biggest gains here, besides just the average, of course, the plate discipline was tremendous. Less than 15% K rate, walk 10% of the time. Like those are, on a young player, that kind of a gain is big. Now, can he duplicate it again? Big question. But I'm a huge Gleyber Torres fan. He was like Giménez and Torres, I pretty much my second baseman everywhere this past year. And I'll be all in on Gleyber again. But what are your thoughts on him for 2023 as he put together a very steady season?
I mean, that's name. That's name of the game. Steady Eddie. I mean, I think you're getting a 270 batting average, 25-10. Yeah. And so, like, honestly, at second base, that's pretty damn solid. I don't know what Torres' early 2024 ADP is, but if you could pencil that in outside the top 100 picks, I think that's a fantastic
107.
Yeah, I would take that. I would take that all day. And actually, talking through this, we'll get to some of the duds in a little bit. But like, so far, everyone's been pretty good. Like, second base, I don't know. Maybe I won't jump to conclusions, but there are some options here. Different types of guys, different types of skill sets, and different types of floor ceiling combos that I think are pretty enticing, depending on what your early round picks are.
Yeah, 'cause at least like the top eight we talked about, like the worst batting average is around 250. That doesn't crush your team at all in this era of baseball. And you got some better batting average guys, but you're getting 15 plus homers, usually 20 plus on some of these guys, and you're getting 15 plus stolen bases, kind of like you're getting a very solid floor at second base. Whereas we come farther down the list here, it's very volatile, as you mentioned. And so maybe it's worth it to like say, you know, it's not the sexiest to pick. There might be like a 30 homer, 10 steal outfielder on the board, but I could lock in the second base guy. That's going to be pretty darn good. And they're so young. Like a lot of these guys, like I keep reiterating that. Like we could see a whole other, like Gleyber Torres, for instance, that Yankees offense was dreadful this season. What if they ever figured it out again? What if they go make a couple moves? Now he's got 90. He's gotten last season 90 runs and like 62 RBIs. That could easily be like 110 and 85. Like that's big. Like because like context matters. But like this, these top eight second basemen, there's a lot to like here. Even though it's like not flashy, but it's pretty impressive.
Agreed. Full agree.
Ahmed Rosario. I'm just gonna bring him up because I know you were an Ahmed guy.
This last is my season. Man.
It's ninth off the board, 31st finishing position, 263, five homers, 13 stolen bases, six homers. I mean, two teams, didn't play all the time with LA. Thoughts?
Oh, man. No, the only thought, I'll just roll a couple numbers out here. Ahmed Rosario will be 28 next year.
Another young one.
His full season dollar earnings per HQ since 2019, I'm going to throw out the COVID season, $23, $19, $27. And then last year, $13. What's the next number in that sequence? I am betting it will be higher than $13. And I'm also betting Ahmed Rosario's ADP will be much cheaper than what we saw last year. Given the age, given the track record, maybe I'm stubborn, but I will be back in on Ahmed Rosario. Fully admitting that I would have been wrong this year because it was a disaster.
He's a
free agent. He's where he signs, he will play. I'm again speculating, but just really like the bounce back potential. But yes, a down year for my man to finish, to be drafted in the top 10 at the position and finish outside the top 30. We don't like that.
Yeah, you're getting an early ADP of 372.
Dude.
Yeah,
come on. That's
pretty juicy.
It was like 119 last year. Like, come on.
The 44th second baseman off the board right now. If I named you half of these guys, you're like, no, like he's going to be a starting shortstop or second baseman at least. Wow, this is an interesting list. That's enticing. Enticing. This is what early drafting can be fun for. That's a heck of a pick right there if you can pull that one off. Let's stick with our youth movement. The 10th second baseman off the board finished fourth overall. He's 26 too, by the way. That's Nico Horner. Nico Horner played 150 games this year, hit nine homers, stole 43 bases, and hit 283. I think, Ryan, we can agree, the expected average, some steals, a little bit of power. This is pretty darn impressive. What's your thought? And the plate discipline's great. So what's your thoughts on Nico Horner as he continues to develop as the leadoff hitter for the Chicago Cubs?
I mean, this is when I say middle rounds, and I preach middle rounds every offseason leading in a draft season. If you identify Nico Horner as your middle round pick at the position or for steals or whatever, I don't want to say he was a league winner, but he certainly helped that cause and didn't even hurt you too bad, like slightly hurt you in homers. Nine homers isn't that great. But man, to get to hit 283, but not only 283, but across 688 plate appearances, the weight of that 283 batting average is just massive. And then obviously the 43 steals. So I would say Nico Horner was the breakout, maybe 1A, 1B, who we'll get to a little bit later, I think.
Yeah, sure. There's one later for sure.
But but kudos to anyone who took Herner in that what ninth, tenth round of 15 teamers, later than that in 12s, and gave you top five value at second base. That was a hell of a pick.
Yeah, I just want to mention real quick. So last year there were 7 second basemen taken in the top 100. Currently there's 9 going in the top 100. Copy. And last year there were, let's just throw in Luis Garcia at pick 155. There were 12 in the top 155 last year. Right now there are, if we go to 156, there's 17 second basemen. So people are moving them up their board for many reasons, but it kind of goes, I think, to probably some of the stuff we're mentioning here about consistency, potential ceilings, stuff like that, that make it interesting. Max Muncy, great season. We'll talk about him more at the corners because he will not have second base next year, but 36 home runs if you had him at second. I guess one reason we liked him, actually, I think, as a second base, third base guy, or second base, first base guy last year. So he's a monster. Luis Garcia, disappointed. I think that's fair. Jorge Polanco, 13th off the board, finished 46th. Didn't run, hurt all the time. Any quick thoughts on Polanco? Like, it's just frustrating because the talent's there when he's healthy. We even saw it late, like in September, it was great. He just could not stay healthy.
Minnesota Twinsitis.
Yeah, it's bad over there. Brandon Lau, 231 with 21 homers, 7 steals. I guess we can give a second here. He was the 14th off the board, finished 29th. This is the guy that's always on my do not draft list because he's always hurt. Like the back injury, it comes back every single season. He's going to be 30 this year. I played in 109 games last year, 65, 149, 21, short in 20 season, but 82, 43. To me, that's just who he is. Any thoughts on Brandon Lau? Like, the power is legit. I've never denied that. I just can't trust him to be on the field.
No, just exhibit 632 of April victory laps. Brandon Lau started pretty hot, 7 homers, 20 runs, 18 RBI in April, and then... yes, injuries played a role, but fell pretty far quickly.
Let's go back to our young second baseman, the 27-year-old second baseman.
This one.
This stings because I think one of my bold predictions is like he was going to be the next Jazz Chisholm or something like that. It was something along those lines. I think I said 30-30 is what I was saying with Thyro Estrada. Thyro was the 15th second baseman off the board at pick 22, or pick 169, finished 22nd second baseman. He hit 271, 14 homers, 23 steals in 120 games. In 2022, in 140 games, had 14 homers and 21 steals while hitting 260. I got a lot of blowback on my love for Thyro Estrada. I still love Thyro Estrada, and this is one of those guys that, if he stayed healthy, I think at least 2030 for sure was like in the bags, if not more. I love Thyro. I think he had an amazing season. Couldn't stay healthy, and they were kind of freakish. One was like a hit by pitch on the hand and like just stupid things. So I'm not that concerned about Thyro Estrada, but do you have any thoughts on him?
It's funny you mentioned the numbers 20 and 30 because I had Estrada's box in the forecaster and I threw an upside projection of him, 20 home runs, 30 steals. This guy was Jazz Chisholm in the first half, and it just got totally derailed by injury. In the first half skills, we break out first half to second half in all of our forecaster boxes. It's pretty wild to see the like total collapse of pretty much everything in the second half. And it's just, maybe it's a coincidence, but I don't think so. It's all right after that injury. So I think Thyro Estrada, like, this guy was on pace for a breakout season, just got derailed. And so don't know what the early ADP is or whatever, but I don't really care. Like, I'm very interested in your boy for next year.
He's one of the top 17 in the top 156. He's 155.75, right in front of Tommy Edman right now. So yeah, very excited about that one. Jonathan India is a fun one because even in our early draft he fell in ADP, and a lot of it's just due to injury. But he was the 16th second baseman off the board at pick 176 this last year, 178. Finished 21st still. I think that's pretty good considering he played 119 games. Hit 17 homers, stole 14 bags, hit 244. Power was up from last year. Speed was definitely up from last year. But it's back-to-back seasons with injuries. And he's going to be 27, another young second baseman. The talent is legit. The crowdedness, I should say, of Cincinnati is an interesting discussion point as well, but when he was healthy, he was in the lineup every day. And I think he's a stud and could be another, still be a stud, but injuries got him this year. So what are your thoughts on Jonathan India?
Yeah, and this is one where like you do need to look at the injuries and say, is it a fluke thing? Is it, we're talking about Estrada, is it a hit by pitch on the hand? Is it, in India's case, plantar fasciitis last year, more foot problems this year? Like, is he injury prone? I'm leaning that way. And so like that doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies for a 2024 draft price, just because I think you have to bake in not only lost time, but like it's not a cut and dry when he's healthy or not. At least it hasn't been the last two seasons. It's India trying to gut it, which is the worst thing. Yep. He's playing and gutting it out and not performing. You'd rather just have him on the AIL. And you just wonder, like, yes, we saw what the ceiling is in the first half with Jonathan India when he was fully healthy. But I don't think we can trust him going forward to stay at that level over a full season. Would be happy to be wrong, and the numbers would be great if that did happen with Jonathan India. But man, just starting to get that injury prone label, and I think it's somewhat well deserved. Probably a bad word, but whatever.
Yeah, he said the hamstring issues. So it's like soft tissue ligament stuff that those linger, and that's like it reminds me of Tulowitzki for some reason. Plus, they're trying to trade him. They were trying to trade him last year. He just couldn't stay healthy. Like, him out of Great American, not ideal. So, yeah, interesting season for Jonathan India. Vaughn Grissom, we kind of know that saga. Ended with a strikeout in the DS series. Drake Cronenworth basically just stopped playing. That was a gigantic... Like, I'll give you the floor if you got anything on Jake. I'm just like, that's a disaster that I don't even know if I want to go back to right about now. Do you have anything on Jake Cronenworth?
Nope.
Yeah. Whit Merrifield, I do want to talk about, though. 19th second baseman off the board, 16th overall. Now, he's older. He's 34. Completely different than we've been talking about. He hit 272 with 11 homers and 26 steals. We've always known Whit can steal bags if he gets regular playing time. That was the big question last year, and he got 145 games. It's pretty big stuff there for Whit Merrifield. What are your thoughts on this season, though? Because, you know, outside of the steals and a good batting average, it's kind of like, yeah, across the board.
Yeah, and I had Whit Merrifield on my Tout Wars team, and it was kind of meh. Like you do look at the end of the season numbers, and it's okay, not prime Whit Merrifield. I do look at the 26 steals with 10 caught stealings. Like, that success rate isn't that hot, and he's going to be 35 next year. So I just wonder, like, for somebody whose fantasy value is so tied to his legs, that worries me. And I'm kind of made this point with Tommy Edman earlier, 26 steals, well, decent, isn't making the impact that 26 steals did a year or two ago. So yeah. I just see like a player in decline with, I don't know, he had a 318 OBP, like the real life skills aren't that great. So I don't know if he even gets a full-time role, in 2024. So I just worry about it. A decent bounce back season, but I don't know if I'm too keen on Whit Merrifield going forward.
I'm with you. Jeff McNeil's next, and Brandon Drury, we kind of hit on him before. Yeah. 262, 26 homers, zero steals. But another, like, you know, productive season in the power department. He's got the multi-position eligibility. Any thoughts on Brandon Drury, or did we already hit on him enough?
Yeah, I think we hit on him a little bit last week, so we're okay. Good.
Ryan McMahon, this is another guy I want to discuss, just because every year it seems like people are like, oh, Ryan McMahon sucks. Well, he's 28. he's 28 years old, and he was 22nd off the board, still finished 18th, ADP of 202. That doesn't stink. He hit 240 with 23 homers, 5 steals. If you look at his stat lines, this is who Ryan McMahon is. 240 to 250 hitter, 20 to 25 home runs, 5-6 steals or so. That's who he is. And if you don't like that, then don't draft him. And then he's also played at least 150 games in 3 straight seasons. So is he great? Probably not. Is he pretty good at post 200? Probably. So like I don't understand the hate. Tell me if I'm wrong. I just don't get the hate for Ryan McMahon.
No, I just love the impression, which could do that voice more often than others. That's pretty good. I actually drafted Ryan McMahon in our too early DC because he just plays all the time. And yep. I need that middle infield. The only issue with getting Ryan McMahon is you're getting like old man skills. You're getting first base skills. And if you're getting, and what I mean by that is you're getting like a low-ish batting average, not many bags and some power. You can get that. That's almost a commodity. if you're getting that in your middle infield spot, you're probably falling behind in stolen bases. So that's the only issue from like a team construction standpoint. But in terms of McMahon in a vacuum, nothing wrong with like settling on a top 15, 20 ish second baseman as your middle infielder late in drafts. Like, and you could even do better than that by streaming Coors Weeks and non-Coors Weeks and that sort of thing in weekly leagues. So yeah, I don't, I'm not part of the Ryan McMahon sucks crowd, but there's he's a lot not, of I there. Mean, the ceiling's pretty low too. That's the thing I'll say.
I just always liked him because it's just, it's consistent. I give a later pick, I can go consistent there and take chances elsewhere. It's nice. We won't talk about a ton of these guys, but I got a couple more I want to hit real quick. Ketel Marte being one of them. He was a 23rd off the board, finished fifth at second base. And that came with a 276 average, 25 homers, 8 stolen bases. If you want to go deeper, 94 runs, 82 RBIs, and one of the longest hitting streaks in the postseason currently at 16 games. The thing with Ketel Marte, I think most of us can admit, we know the skills are there. It's just a matter of can we play? We played 150 games. That's the most since 2018. And we saw the skills improve in a lot of areas. So what's your thoughts on Ketel Marte? Because the trend continues. He'll be 30 this year. So he's not like super young, but he's not old either. What's your thoughts on Marte's 2023?
Just a nice bounce back. I don't think we're ever going to see the 2019 version of Ketel Marte when he hit 329, 32 homers, 10 steals. I believe we got a listener question on Ketel Marte. I forget who it was from, but the gist of it was, such an up and down dude over the last like 5 years, which is spot on. Ketel Marte, at least per HQ values in 2019, $33 player, which is like a first round, second round, early second round player, $33, and then 7, 15, 11, then last year in the mid 20s. And so like from a projection standpoint, this is somebody who like projections will not hit because the projections are going to say $17, $18 guy. He's never been that guy. It's either been like $10 or closer to $30. And so it's just like, which which side of the coin are you going to bet on for 2024? I feel like you're probably buying in coming off a, not a career year, but a pretty damn good year, which may only improve in his market value because of this postseason that we're seeing. What's the postseason hitting streak? 16
games right now.
Pretty nuts. Hell of a season. I don't know. Like, I'd rather have like the safety of Gleyber Torres. I don't 100%. Know what their ADPs are, but like I would imagine they're probably pretty close. And I just think I'd rather have somebody who I think I know what their stats will be, as opposed to Ketel Marte with the roller coaster.
Yeah. Glaber's 107, Marte's 147. Marte's going right in front of like Thairo Estrada, Tommy Edman. Those would be a couple. Yeah. Right behind Luis Arraez, Andrés Giménez, Zach Geloff is even up there. So a couple
names. With guys who you like just from a roster construction build, like if you don't have confidence in what their stats will be, and again the projection is gonna hedge between the peaks and the valleys, and he's never really been in between, it's just hard to kind of like plan for that.
Boom or bust. What do you got? And especially when you got a guy like this, you said Nico Hoerner might be the breakout guy. This is the guy I think based on ADP. Like Josh Rojas is there, Luis Arraez, he was good, obviously batting average and whatnot. Bryson Stott, this was a dude I was way wrong on. Also 25 years old. Mm-hmm. He hit 280 this last year in 151 games. I was worried about the playing time personally. He played pretty much every day. 15 homers and 31 stolen bases by striking out less than 16% of the time. Like Bryson Stott, the gains he made throughout the season, which carried over into the postseason, if you're A-OK, Bryson Stott was very, very good. And it's one of those where you're going to obviously be paying for 2023, but it was a great season. So what are your thoughts on Bryson Stott's 2023, especially on a Philadelphia team, which I don't see them going anywhere anytime soon. So it's a good place to be for Bryson Stott. How do you like his 2023?
I feel like Stott, if we're just looking back at recapping 2023, he was the poster boy for the rule changes in stolen bases.
True.
12 steals last season in 466 plate appearances. Like, okay. But like, this was a guy who made a complete jump, and deservedly so, in stolen bases. He was a 91% success rate on the base pass, which basically just says like he was successful, and so Philly just kept running him. And like this was the guy, if we're time traveling back to March and saying who are the new rules going to affect the most in terms of steals and increases, like this is the guy. Someone who's young, has some stolen or some raw speed, some track record of at least stealing some bases, and is going to play all the time. Like this was the guy that I think the rules really helped out. And we saw that with 31 steals. Like, I don't think anyone imagined that coming from Bryson Stott in 2023.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I don't think you're going anywhere with the new rules too. So that's why he becomes
very much here to stay. Rob Manfred I saw an interview with him today. He does his media rounds
before the World Series. Yeah.
And he's very proud of his new rules. And honestly, like, not to go off on a tangent, deservedly so. Kudos to MLB for, I think, a very successful implementation after 1 year of the product we saw on the field. But that, I know that's another thing. But
I still hate the extra inning rule, but everything else I'm cool with. I don't mind the rest of it. Like I even noticed, like, when you're live at a game, you don't even realize the pitch clock. You just realize it because it's time to get your last beer.
And I haven't been live at a game, so I do not sympathize. You're at a game and getting beers, but I do somewhat sympathize.
Yeah, I know. Gene Segura, Miguel Vargas, Luis Urias, and DJ LeMahieu round out the top 30. Nothing too crazy there. Do want to highlight a couple on the outside of the top 30 that had monster seasons. One with an ADP of 252, but finished eighth at second base. That is Hao Sung Kim. Is age 27 season, hit 260, 17 homers, 38 stolen bases. previous season in 150 games, 11-12. So he could be another Bryson Stott type example for you there.
Yep.
It was one of those, like, all of a sudden he started playing and leading off every day for San Diego and just flourished in the role. And my two cents on this was it's a combination of there are super high expectations when he came over from overseas. I think it was Korea where Kim came from. Could be wrong.
It was.
Just took some time to get used to it. Like, he's supposed to be the big shortstop. That never worked out. They had Tatis. And like, there's moving him all over the place. And it looks like maybe he just got comfortable. Like, it's one thing when we talk about new contracts in new places. We're talking new countries, new languages. Cultures. That's a whole different animal. It's like when people say, okay, a guy's coming from Japan. Well, look at like the teams that have like Shohei or like, because they want some familiarity. Like, that makes total sense to me. So for Kim, I'm going with that angle. I might be naive, but he seemed much more comfortable this year and looked like the guy that was a beast in Korea that everybody wanted. What's your thoughts on his 2023?
I mean, I think this is the guy who I was alluding to when I was talking to Nico Hoerner. Maybe I glossed over Bryson Stott to go from 26th drafted to 11th. But Ha-Seong Kim, I think, was like the breakout guy, second base. And someone who, like, yeah, for those reasons, Bubba, that you mentioned, like, I need to kind of incorporate into my draft prep process for this season because I did not see this coming. And I took Ha-Seong Kim for a just kind of consistent, high-ish floor, low ceiling, middle infielder. And there was obviously a lot more there. Some of that was playing time related, but some of that also, like you were alluding to, is probably rule change related because he just ran wild on the base pass. 38 steals. Like, that's just, it's unbelievable. I have my doubts given the price, the likely price. I have not looked at the actual price, but I have my doubts at the likely price for Ha-Seong Kim buying in coming off of this
70,
year.
70.
70 seems expensive, but hell of a season for the guy overall. And one of the, I don't want to say one of the few bright spots in San Diego, because San Diego is actually pretty good this year. The record wasn't there, but like they were, from a run differential standpoint, they were pretty damn solid.
Yeah, they were one of those that, like, how did they not win in as many games? Because like, they were scoring, their pitching was that bad. Yeah. I'll just group these two together. Nolan Gorman finished 19th, Christopher Morel finished 20th, ADP of 374, 273 respectively. 23 homers for Gorman, 26 for Morel. Averages both below 250. They're ones that I really need to dig into for 2024, but I love the 2023. I had a lot of Morel and DCs. Like, that was a big thing for me. But any thoughts on those two?
I mean, for 2023, I was mostly just timing. When did you hit on these guys? When did you drop them? In Gorman's case, like the start was really hot, And then how quickly did you monitor that and pull the drop, or at least just the reserve in some of your leagues? And with Morrell, I mean, he was like, I forget when it was, but Morrell was like the fab guy, and sometime in the middle of the season was just on fire for like a month, and then wasn't. So a lot of the 2023 production depended on when you had them active or not.
For sure. Two more here. Two of the better free agent pickups this year when it comes to prospects. Matt McClain, he finished 23rd at second base in 89 games, 16 homers, 14 steals, hit 290. He was an absolute monster. And then I'll just put Zach Geloff here as well. Like, we talked about him so much towards the end of the season because I was just blue in the face with him. But he had an ADP of non-existent, finished 41st of the position, but 69 games, 14 homers, 14 steals, 267 average. Both these guys were super, super productive in their small sample sizes and are both getting drafted accordingly so far this season.
And in a season of high-profile prospect call-ups, these two guys, maybe McClain, like he had some prospect pedigree, but wasn't like an elite prospect. But McClain and Geloff somewhat flew under the radar in terms of like fab and prospects and that sort of thing, and delivered a ton of value in a year again, otherwise that was dominated by, again, mostly on the pitching side, but dominated by high profile call-ups. If you picked up both McClain and Geloff, man, you did all right for yourself.
Yep. Most definitely. Well, that'll wrap up our second base review of the position. We got a few listener questions / comments, so we'll go through these for y'all here. Actually, before we do, what were your, I guess, final thoughts kind of looking at the board on this? Like, we talked kind of top heavy with a couple darts later, but you hinted at it earlier, like there's batting average and whatnot. So what were your kind of overall thoughts looking at second base?
I think overall it's a lit, like it feels like there's a decent top 8-10 maybe heading into 2024. Do think you need to get your bags here. There's a couple different ways to get it via the safety route with like Tommy Edman with, I think, Bryson Stott. But then you also have the, I guess Chisholm's not your second base eligible guy, but there's also some kind of low ceiling, high floor guys as well. So that part of it is more your preference, but I do think you need to get your bags. There's a few different options to be able to do that. And so, feels like you need to get your second baseman in the first 10 rounds in 2024. We'll have plenty of time to dive into that, but I don't know, like pretty good at the top. Like I said, top 10 was all pretty solid with the exception of Ahmed Rosario. Couple breakouts, not a bunch, but I don't know, probably one of the weaker positions overall, but I still think there's a decent early group you can go after.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's going to be a good top 10-ish, maybe 12 if you're really getting frisky, but there'll be a group that it's kind of like, okay, I need to make sure I get one of these guys at least.
Yeah, because it's not, I mean, we glossed over a lot of the like the bust, but you did have your Luis Garcia, Jorge Polanco, Brandon Lau, Vaughn Grissom, Jeff McNeil, you had Josh Rojas, Gene Segura, Miguel Vargas. Like there were a lot of busts, so it's not a very deep position coming off of a bunch of those.
Yeah, I don't see it changing too much. We'll see in 2024.
Yeah.
All right. Questions and comments from the listeners. Matt Thompson at MD Tomp FWFB. He just makes a comment. With Jazz losing eligibility, this isn't a strong position anymore. Yes and no. Yes and no. Like we agree, but yes and no. Carlos Marcano, our buddy, says, how do you guys feel about Glaber making the jump to being a top 3 second baseman? I'm cool with top 5. Top 3's... that's bold. Not saying it's not possible, but it's bold. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't see the path. I don't see the ceiling from the skills. I think in a good year, it could be top 5. I also think in a bad year, Glaber could still be top 10. That's the nice thing is you've got a really good floor there. I can't see, unless like the running game takes off even more than what we saw. It's kind of hard to be top 3 and only get like 10 to 12 bags. But I think you're buying like a really good floor. Somebody's going to play every day. And Bubba, you alluded earlier to the Yankees lineup in theory should be better next year than it was this year. So I like them. I would chill out on top 3 though.
Yeah, it's just hard, barring injuries, of course, to see him outperforming Betts, Semien, Altuve, and Albies. Like, it's just hard to see him cracking those top four, at least to get into the top three.
Even Nico.
Nico, like, what if McLean continues to get better? Like, there's a slew. Like, what if Thyrashara stays healthy? Like, what's his actual ranking? I don't know. Maybe he's probably behind Glaber, but if he goes 20-30, like, it's just, there's a lot of what ifs, of course, but that's the name of the game we play. Jock Thompson mentions second base is tough. Vio Condios, guys. Yes, it's tricky if you don't get one early, as we mentioned.
Jock, we're professionals here. We made it through. We made it through just fine. We'll live to tell you about it next week at FPAC.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Vlad Sedler, our buddy at RotoGut, says, remember the Grissom and Miguel Vargas draft season, Helium? Yeah. RotoGut Farms remembers. Yeah, RotoGut, he was all over, especially Vargas. He was big on Vargas. There was a lot of smart people on him, too. That's just the thing.
Hey, I mean, you look at the prospect pedigree, like a starting gig on the best team in baseball. Yeah. So we thought before the season. Bubba cringes when I say that.
Somehow gets it.
Yeah. I get the process behind it, but yeah, it does seem like about 5 years ago when we were touting Vaughn Grissom and Miguel Vargas.
And then it makes you laugh, and this is a side note. Then they're willing to roster him in the NLDS after not playing him all season, and then pinch hit him in the biggest moment of the game. Like, if you like trust him then, why weren't you trusting him before? Like, what are we doing here? Okay, it's very, very, very confusing to me. Ryan Ireland asks, where are we at with the very likely to be traded India toss up, him or Geloff? We kind of hit on India earlier. It's kind of like if you want to recap what you thought, you could go there, but it was kind of a injury thing and maybe he gets traded. So any real quick thoughts on India again?
No, I think I'd lean Geloff between those two.
I'm with you.
I think some of it is how confident are you in season fab to be able to supplement the good that you get with Jonathan India with the inevitable playing through injury on the IL kind of thing. And some of that might be league size too. Like if you're in a 12 team or your replacement level is better when India is out, I might lean India there, but I think in deeper leagues you go Geloff.
Yep. I'm with you there as well. Everybody, little book of calm. What do we do with Miguel Vargas next year, assuming he gets the gig to start the season like he did last year? For those that forgot, he hit 195 with 7 homers and 3 steals in 81 games. In 60 AAA games, though, he hit 288 with 10 homers and 8 steals. So where are you at on Miguel Vargas?
Honestly, I feel I don't know Vargas's ADP. I feel like this is I talk a lot about like binary decisions late in your draft. Vargas is one of those. Like you take a shot, you throw a dart at this guy late in your draft. If he starts out hot, gets the starting gig, you keep him and see what happens. If he doesn't, you cut, move on, and churn your roster, which you're probably going to do anyway. So Miguel Vargas, the long-term prospect pedigree is still very much alive, had some hand issues. He broke his pinky and got hit by a pitch on the thumb in the same hand. Yeah, this spring and in April, and he played through it. That does not explain everything, certainly. It's not a full injury-related pass, but Bubba, you mentioned the AAA numbers. Like this would be someone who, if I'm throwing upside darts late, which is what I like to do, won't hurt you if you miss.
He's an ADP of 350.
I mean that's palatable.
It'll be interesting though. In that same team, Gavin Lux will be back from his ACL injury.
That's a good point.
And that's another second baseman. So. And there's multiple positions for guys to play in LA as they continue. Some of the older guys are moving out and things like that. So it'd be really interesting to see how the health of Lux is, where they kind of play each other in the spring. There's a lot of moving parts in LA these days. So something to, like, I took a dart on Lux late in our too early draft. Cause I think once people see he's maybe healthy, that's going to change a ton. So that'll be interesting. And Vargas can play third base also, cause maybe they move Muncy around. There's lots of ways this can go. And he says, do you think his struggles are mostly spring hand injury? Yes, we do. All right, next up here. Okay, John Wilder says, any chance we see Bryce Terang take a big step forward in his all-around game, or is he just a speed guy? That's a tough one, man. It's real tough.
It's a tough question because you don't want to close the book on somebody who's so young. Bryce Terang next year will be his age 24 season. Wrote him up for the forecaster and just, I didn't see it, man. I did not see it. I see the speed, but I also see very little power. I see a platoon bat and I also see a batting average that like,
I don't really see a ceiling over like 230. And again, I hate to put that on someone who's just 24. There's room for growth there for sure. But from what we've seen in the major league skills, I don't see it happening in 2024. Could someday materialize. And the bags are going to be there, but it's going to be very inconsistent playing time, and you're not going to get many other stats with those stolen bases.
Yeah, he's an interesting one because he had a really good like August hitting-wise, average everything, then just deteriorated, stole 17 bags in the second half compared to 9 in the first. So like he is a definite speed guy, but I'm with you. It's tough to see where it all kind of falls into play. Yep. Sweaty Ray commented on Vlad's comment saying, thank God I got sniped twice in my main league draft on both Vargas and Grissom.
It is funny how sometimes guys you're on, you get sniped and it works out for the better. What yep. little we know.
Exactly. What little do we know? Our buddy Mike Carter says, and he's a White Sox fan, by the way, let me preface this. Can the White Sox find a real second baseman? Tim Anderson, maybe, if his knee's healthy, because we'll talk about that at shortstop. I've been biting my tongue on that comment all day. But yeah, maybe. I don't know,
Carter. I don't know if Lenin Sosa is your guy at second base this year. We'll discuss it next week over some beers, but we may have to create a player.
Someone did comment, well, what about Nick Madrigal? Because they had him and traded him.
That's right.
That was good. Doug Dennis said, I had way too much Vaughn Grissom. Then Jock Thompson came back and said, not an austere or even CES. So, yeah, that's the conundrums that is some of these early guys. Yeah, New York Stress Reaction said, maybe Madrigal is available. That was pretty funny. Mike Huey at Wax Packs says, I had Segura and Urias on the same team, placeholders until Altuve came back, but still. So he's making a point like, well, Altuve was hurt. He used those guys, but they were kind of dead numbers.
Yep. The Altuve part worked out, but you didn't get much until then.
Seth Baby says Jazz is way too high. Well, that's where he was drafted.
I think that's more of a retrospective pick. Yes, he did not return the value. But again, like what we said, a lot of that was what you did with that missed time with Jazz. Who'd you pick up? How'd you fill that spot?
For sure. Our buddy Ben Tidd says, I don't know about you guys, but it seems like second base had a much better return on investment than first base, at least pre-pick 200. Maybe, I guess. I don't know. I guess it depends on what you like steals, like you said, Ryan, but I don't know. First base just had so much thump.
Yeah, different types of production. Yeah, can't go against the good doctor, Ben Tidd, but in general, like I said, in general, you got your steals early in second base. You didn't get, I can see where he's going. Like you did not get like the middle rounds with second base was pretty rough, and there were only a few breakout guys. So like if you waited on second base, like chances are you kind of sucked at the position. And so you had to go early to at least get some type of stats at the Keystone.
That's very true. And our last question is from Big Willie G, Will Garofalo.
Oh,
yes, we got a Willie G here.
D-backs fan, my man.
D-backs. We'll see him next week. Some say second base middle infield lacks top level talent and depth. Do you feel that's true? That's question one. Do you feel that's true?
What was the question?
Some say second base / middle infield lacks top level talent and depth.
I would say we haven't gotten a shortstop yet, but no, I think between Betts, Semien, Albies, Altuve, you've got enough at least at second base, and traditionally shortstop's been deeper. So yeah, I think it's deep enough.
And then he goes, how do you handle this position from a steals versus power perspective? Do you feel like you need steals? Yes.
Yeah, mentioned that 100%. A couple of times. But yeah, I think, yeah, if you don't get bags here, you really need to either get like JTR at catcher or some kind of stolen base guy at first base. You need to kind of work and make up for it if you don't get speed at second base.
Favorite 2024 breakout or sleeper at the position?
Jeez, Willie G with the multi-question. I don't know.
Gavin Lux cheating?
No.
I think that'd be my pick right now based on where he's going in drafts.
What was Estrada's ADP?
He's 150. Like I think he's going to be. Yeah.
Doesn't qualify as a breakout sleeper. I don't know. I'm going to have to punt. I haven't looked too much at
that can be for the 2024 preview, that pick. And then the fun question, the last question of the night from Willie G. First high noon flavor when you touch down in Arizona.
There we go. This is the question of the night. Bubba, you're the I mean, you from what I hear, you had a few earlier today at your pre-FPAS golf tournament.
A few.
Did we sample different flavors? What did we do? The pool pack, the El Prez pack? What did we do?
We had them all. all of them. I had some lemon. I had some lime, some passion fruit, grapefruit, mango, pineapple.
Jesus.
a little bit of everything. I think if I have to, my go-to is always grapefruit, but the lemon and limes are starting to catch on. So we'll see what the bar has, but I'm going to say grapefruit would be my one if I had to pick one when I first touched down at FBS.
That was going to be my follow-up to Garofalo's fourth question in the tweet was what flavors are we going with for the live show next week?
Oh, pretty much anything but black cherry or watermelons. Game with me.
All right.
Just throw them in a bucket.
Set it in stone.
Yep. We'll make it happen. But I'll do it, Bloom. Final thoughts as we wrap up the second base position.
Just stoked for next week. I cannot wait. I'll see you maybe Wednesday night, depending on what debauchery you get in on Wednesday.
You'll see me Wednesday night. Yeah, you'll see me.
At the very least, Thursday morning for golf, and then 3 to 4 days of just a ton of fun out there. So yeah, cannot wait. It's going to be, I was telling you the other day, it finally hit like the other day when we were pairing up groups and doing tee times. It's like, all right, this is actually happening in like 10 days. And it's on the weather forecast thing for the next 10 days or whatever. That's always a good sign. And
low, no rain,
sunny, no rainstorm. So maybe I'll shoot better than last year with no rain.
Here we go. But yeah, that's going to be a blast. See Ryan in less than a week. See hopefully a bunch of you listeners out there as well. Don't be shy. Come up and talk to us.
Please.
Come on. The more the merrier. Come to the live show, obviously. If you can't, we'll have the podcast for you over the weekend next week. So a reminder, no Thursday show. You will get a show. And then we'll come at you the following week, starting twice a week. So we'll be ramping things up for you to get you ready because we don't sleep during the offseason. There is no other sport going on right now. This is baseball. This is what we do. So we'll have you covered there. And until then, make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BDintrick. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 80, your second base review for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. Catch y'all later.